Gosh, John, I forget how good you are at karate. That's incredible.
I know, man. I mean, it's all about the right belt.
It is. Timing, you know? Or your leather belt.
Exactly.
I feel like maybe, is that not, that's what you meant?
Not really, okay. But speaking of, Dave, wow, I'm just going to try to transition to save you. Finally, Dave.
Yeah.
Warm spring days are arriving.
Oh,
am I right?
Isn't it great? You know what? I need a new pair of shades that I don't have to baby. Do you know what I'm saying, John? I don't want to take care of them. Let me put them on, take them off, and not have to worry about
them. Hey, Dave, I know exactly
what you mean. Sorry, I didn't mean to rant.
Knock around is the solution. They've been making high-quality shades that don't break the bank since 2005.
Oh, wow.
And they've actually been my personal go-tos for years.
Oh, yeah. I love Knock Around, John. They have over 20 different frame styles, so there's something for everyone, including tons of kids' pairs.
That's right. So whether you're looking to rep your favorite sports teams, you know, like you're a sports guy, spend some relaxation time in the yard, or cruise down Broadway with the windows down like Dave does all the time.
All the time.
Every Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday. Knock Around, that's what you need.
Yeah. All of their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyes, which, by the way, I've tried that and it hurts. Use the sunglasses, everybody. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
Dave, that is such a good price that I might buy a pair just to intentionally lose them.
I don't love that logic, John, but
I know,
you do have a history of misplacing. It's Knock Around.
Don't fight me because of the karate stuff.
But it could be perfect for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, Dadville fans, don't squint through family beach days or trips to the park. Check out knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com. Hey everybody, it's me, Dave, one half of Dadville. Now, I've been a singer-songwriter for the last 20 years or so, but about 10 years ago, my dear friend and manager at the time pushed me to try to start doing some stand-up shows. If you've been to any of my live music shows, you know I'm chatty and love to tell stories and jokes, so it made sense. So, I was just dumb enough to try it. Since then, I've done about 30 or so stand-up shows, and that means no guitar, just me and the mic and my funnies. About 4 years ago, I did a stand-up show here in Nashville at City Winery, and we recorded the show, and that show is now an album called It's Hard Being an Idiot and is available on Spotify, Apple Music, and everywhere you listen to music and comedy. To celebrate the release of the album, I thought it would be fun to do some interviews with some of my favorite stand-up comedians to talk about not just being funny, but being professionally funny. On today's episode, I sit down with the absolutely hysterical Dustin Nickerson. Dustin, I've known about for a while. We actually share some mutual friends here in Nashville, and they've been raving about him for forever. I did a deep dive a few months ago, and Dustin is one of those comics that, and this is the highest compliment I can give, it was like one video I couldn't stop watching, and so I just let the next one pop up and watch that one and then watch the next that came up. I mean, I kind of couldn't get out of this Dustin Nickerson black hole, which should be maybe the name of his band and or next comedy album. He is truly hysterical. And the thing that he does that is really intimidating to me is it feels like he's got a million jokes in one set. Like, all of his jokes seem to be these incredibly fast. All the payoffs are really fast. We talk about that some in the special because I think about some comics, you know, they're more story oriented. They want to, it takes them a while to get to a joke or they're kind of telling you a story. Dustin feels like he's just like blasting you with humor, which, man, these are terrible descriptions, but he's just so funny and he's so fast, and every joke is it's got a quick sort of turnaround on it, so you're not sitting there waiting for the payoff, which is just so impressive. That intimidates and impresses me greatly. He's got a special called Overwhelmed. He and his wife have a podcast called Don't Make Me Come Back There. He talks a lot about his family, which is really fun. He's just really funny. And I think you'll hear from this interview, he's one of those guys you just kind of feel like, I think I'd hang out with him. Another fun fact about him we talk about is that he kind of got into comedy a little later in life, which seems to be a little bit of a theme on this podcast so far, which is fun to figure out. But I so enjoyed this interview. I think you will too. So here is my interview with Dustin Nickerson. I hope you giggle as much as I did. Enjoy. Dustin, you are a very funny, funny dude. I mean,
sweet.
I have, that's it. I think we're good.
Thanks for having me. This is a good time. I already really like this podcast. Just, I have low self-esteem. If this could just be a compliments podcast.
Well, I think you'll find that it's going to be that way. I did. I just spelunked the internet watching the videos. And dude, there's just, you're really funny. I mean, I know you know that it's what you do for a living, but like I laughed so much watching the bits. I mean, there were, and I want to give some of my highlights because I just think they're too good to gloss over. The dad bod bit.
Thank you.
I covet that bit. Like I had to sort of, you know, the line, the dad, what you say, you question the dads who are built well because, and I quote, those are just muscles that aren't hugging their children. I mean, dude, I was crying in the car. Like I thought I was going to have to pull over. There's so much good. The one that really, I texted you about this. It really wowed me because to me, there's like humor and people are being funny. And then there's sort of like the superhero level skill that you exhibit in this one bit that you posted where you're at it looks like a black comedy club. I mean, was it when you were with Kev on stage?
Yeah. I mean, it's an alleyway because this was, we were like in, not a black alleyway, just an alleyway. It's okay. Just a normal alleyway.
Well, it seems
alleyway.
Like everybody that you can see in the shot is African American. Like I didn't see any white people in the shot.
No. I was the only one on the premise.
Yeah.
Okay. But what it was Kev who produced my special and it's at Transit Studios, who also where my special was shot. He was doing a thing called Keep Your Distance Comedy during the pandemic where
That's right. That's what that was.
So that was my set from that. Yeah.
Dude, I think you're funny anyway, but you're That set to me, I mean, I watched the video and I thought that's a guy, that's an assassin. That is a guy who stepped in. I was telling somebody about it this morning. I was like, it just feels like you leaned into like, this is the moment. This is what's happening. Everybody sees it. Like, and I was so impressed at how much you tweak your bit to sort of make it work that night.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of it. There was, you know, I texted you back and I meant it when I said, you know, kind of a lightning in the bottle moment that it did feel, you know, I knew there was a lot of eyes on it. I didn't know it would blow up on YouTube the way that it did. Like that was my biggest thing by far on YouTube. But I knew that it was kind of, I had some, that's the thing in any, I mean, in anything, but a lot in comedy and a lot in live entertainment, there's calculated risk. There you go. Right. Okay, well, if I can make a joke about the guy in the front row at the beginning, that'll establish it. And then if I can, and then the thing that happened to me right before that about, you know, them referring to me, the one white guy there, and I was on the show. I was like the next comedian. I was like, goodness gracious. So, and, you know, there were a couple jokes that night, like that I only told one time and, you know, and then the probably the most known joke from that I get quoted the most is the one about my last name, you know, sounding
dude,
like the N word. You know what's funny about that bit is that bit has been told on stage two times. I've thought about it a lot. Two times. One time in front of a white crowd where it bombed triumphantly because everyone's really uncomfortable with the idea because I'm not saying anything. Everything that I say, even everywhere in my acts, even when I'm touching on issues, is very benign. I'm not actually saying anything, but there's buzzwords. And that required a black crowd to go like, oh, no, this is, and it required, I didn't actually plan on saying that until the guy before Jonathan, who I referenced in the video, who was like, you can say the N word. I was like, okay, this is the opportunity to jump off of that bit into my last name. Nobody, I get people who are in the comments all the time, like, oh man, like, it's just like, you know, it's like, seems so confident up there. And I was like, oh, I was terrified. Not terrified because the crowd, terrified because I was telling new jokes.
I don't know.
These aren't the hits. These aren't.
Right.
And then I'm doing topical jokes about Lil Nas and shit. I didn't know how any of that stuff was going to go, but it just felt right.
Well, it's so interesting because that to me, again, it's just so impressive. I mean, I think comedy is impressive anyway, but when you can see that somebody is going off the top of the dome and they're just like, here we go, there's a bravery you have to respect. I randomly, I was doing this show in Knoxville. It's probably a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
Downtown, outside, like a music show. And the promoter comes over. He's like, hey, man, Sinbad is playing the Tennessee Theater across the street. You want to come check the set out? Because I was done. Like, this, it was like a sunset show. Like, the, you know, as the sun's going down. So, you know, I was done pretty early. And I walk over with him. And, I mean, I stood side stage. And he, so he does, you know, he's kind of doing his bit. He gets kind of, I mean, it's not, I mean, he had been up for like 30 minutes. That had been long. And he's like, all right, I'm just going to open it up. Y'all got any questions?
Yeah.
And dude, I really felt like I was watching Picasso paint. Because people just start yelling stuff. And he's, I mean, lightning fast.
Yeah.
He never got stumped. Everything that he said was funny.
Yeah, like, yeah, that
it
checks
really
out.
It was like one of those things I was like, that's just such a unique skill set. And some of that, what I felt like in your video, I was like, it's some of that same energy of like, man, I don't know where this is going, but I'm riding the lightning.
Me neither. You know what? Actually, I hadn't remembered it until this moment, like, because I haven't really done the director's cut of that video. But, you know, that crowd, a lot of them were there at my special taping a couple months before. And I was like, I have to give them material they haven't seen before.
Yeah, because
I have to be fresh. And that's a lot of what it was. But there is something to that, too, of just like, you burned your best weapons. Now let's see what you really got. Let's see. You know, the first time that I did the Keep Your Distance, they had never seen me before. I was like, this is 9 years worth of hits, like that I think will go for this. But
yeah.
But yeah, Sinbad was the best. It is the best at that, you know. And he very famously never wrote a set list. He very famously, like, when he first started, people encouraged him to get into comedy, and then he kind of started like a Seinfeld type, like a very calculated every word, like a George Carlin, you know. Then people, and it was bombing, and then he had people are like, his friends are like, hey, just be funny, do what you do off stage, which is great. Yeah, I mean, he's as funny as it gets. Nobody funnier.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to talk to you guys and gals about an awesome American company called Grip 6. Grip 6 proudly manufactures and makes all their products right here in the USA using innovative, minimalist, and buckle up for this big word, utilitarian design. Oh, Dave knows some big words. Grip 6 utilizes the utmost quality in their variety of products and guarantees a lifetime warranty. That's right, lifetime warranty on all of them, including belts, wallets, socks, and so much more. I've especially loved my Grip 6 belt and the socks. I get my run on in those things and keep my pants up with that good-looking belt. That's the life I live, y'all, okay? Don't judge me. The belt is so cool with its patented sleek design that William Shatner, that's right, William Shatner himself, and the Blue Origin team wore it all the way into space. What other belt can say that, huh? Come on. Not only is the minimalist design Shatner certified, which should be trademarked at this point, but it's also the most comfortable belt you'll ever wear. With Thanksgiving and holidays right around the corner, I'm going to be honest with y'all, and this is just real talk. I need a belt that won't pinch my gut, okay? And Grip 6 passes the test with flying colors. I've tried it. Don't judge me. The special Grip 6 friction locking technology makes your belt stay tight all day, but it's still micro-adjustable. That's right. That means little changes, y'all. Gosh, them holes is too far away. Sometimes I just need a little change. That's what it gives you. And it's so comfortable. Though I personally like to stick to the Grip 6 Ninja Belt in black. Their interchangeable buckles and straps come in a variety of colors and styles that will suit just about anyone. Visit grip6.com. That's GRIP6.com today to shop belts, wallets, and so much more. I'm so fascinated by this idea that it seems to me, and you may be able to put this more eloquently, it kind of feels to me like there's two types of comedians, and there's a million, right? There's
sure.
Maybe 2 million. But it feels like to me there's kind of two types. There are like kind of storytellers, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, they're kind of, everything's kind of funny because they're just kind of talking. And it's, to me, Sinbad may be the archetype of that, where
right.
if he's at a party, go over and listen to him talk. It doesn't matter what he's talking about.
Right, right.
He's just kind of inherently funny. Something about his brain sees the world and goes, I can make all of this funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's kind of people, to me, like Brian Regan talks about this, like he's like, I'm not that guy. if you go to see me at a party, you know, I may be boring, honestly. But right, if you give me time to put a set together and nobody interrupts me, I'm going to kill.
Yeah.
Which to me is like maybe that more George Carlin. I kind of think of Seinfeld in that same boat where it's like everything is eloquent. It's got its place. One word changes the joke entirely. It's not so much about mannerisms. It's about, I mean, Regan has got a lot of funny mannerisms, but you know, he's got his bits. It's bam, 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 bam.
Even the mannerisms are calculated, though.
Yes, yes, yes. Where do you, because you're tricky to me, because I feel like you straddle a weird middle of that.
Well, I think the majority of comics, I think Sinbad is an outlier, that type. The majority of comics that I have met and have spent time with are introverted. We were not particularly funny in high school. Most people are surprised that we were comedians. We were not unfunny, weren't class clowns.
Right.
Because when you think about it, really the meat of stand up is writing. It's what is, you know, and then kind of the surrounding stuff is the performance of it all, but it's all writing. It's all very calculated.
Yeah. Right.
So, that's where I am as a person, and everything I do, every bit is pretty calculated, but only to an extent, because most comedians too are willing to break script and like, to do a crowd work moment. Or I also have like terrible ADHD, which means I forget stuff all the time. Like I'll forget about whole bits. Like I did it. There's a joke in my special about the seatbelt law and how stupid I think that law is. And that was like my closing bit for like a year. And one of my best friends, Taylor Tomlinson, who I started with and I'm touring with right now, she was like, right before the special, she's like, why don't you do the seatbelt bit anymore? I was like, I totally forgot about that bit. Like, and so sometimes there is just a very human element of like, I'm breaking script because literally I can't remember, or I just get distracted by something that happens in the crowd.
Yeah.
So I do kind of straddle, yes.
It's interesting, like, listening to so much of your comedy in the last week. You're also, man, you've got a little bit of that Mitch Hedberg thing in that I just feel like every minute you've got a joke. It's really insane. Like, you're not... You're just, it's like, bam, 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 bam. Like, I was listening to some of the videos today on your site, and it's like, it's so fast. There's the setups are just so quick, which is really impressive to me.
Thanks, man. You know? Yeah. If anything, I should slow down. It's funny. I was talking to somebody about that this week too, but it comes from, just plain bad rooms.
Where you got to.
You're just like, I'm going to stay on top of you, and I'm not going to give you a chance to heckle me. You're not going to get, because heckles happen in silence. And so I just won't be. And it has worked again. I remember the first time that I performed in Vegas. So I was doing Brad Garrett's club at the MGM in Vegas. And Vegas is long. You do full weeks. Like, you don't do that really anywhere else. It's very old school. Like, it used to be that, like in the 80s, comedy clubs used to be that way, where the comedian would fly in or drive in or bus in, who knows, you know, on Tuesday, and he's there through Sunday. It's not really like that anywhere except Vegas. Vegas, you drive in on a Monday and you drive out the next Monday. Wow. And I was there, and Vegas is a weird city because they don't have anything in common. And like the people there, the only thing they have in common is that they're in that room. They're not from the same place. They don't necessarily speak the same language. They certainly don't believe the same things. They don't like, so it's hard to unify everybody. And I was bombing. Like, I bombed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I was just... I mean a true bomb. Like, I just like, I'm going to get fired before the weekend.
And I'm going to make it through the weekend.
And the middle, I was just hosting. I was only doing 15 up top. And the middle, this guy named Dave Burley pulls me aside and he goes like, you have to slow down. And he goes, I can tell you work a lot and I can tell you play a lot of bad rooms and you're very funny, but these people paid $50 to be here. They are assuming you're funny. They think it already. They think this is you don't have to prove anything to them.
Yeah.
And it totally changed. You're like, okay, sit on the punchline a little more, you know.
Did you see it? Like, did you see it change the next
night? The next show. I go, I couldn't believe that nobody had ever spent $50 to see me. Nobody would spend $50 to hang out with me, let alone see me do my jokes. Right, like, right. I don't, you know, like they, and so I literally, I went down to Ross and I got a blazer, like a jacket. And I was like, no. I'm going to doll this up a little more and right. not look like my normal, you know, freaking comedy club on a Thursday open flannel night that I always have. And then I like, and I, it totally made a difference. And now I didn't like crush. It's still, Vegas right. is still a weird crowd.
Right.
But it was so much different, and which was great because Brad, you know, who's Robert on Everybody
yeah,
Loves
yeah,
Raymond,
yeah, yeah.
Brad came in on Friday, and I was like, whoo, figured this yeah. out before yes. the big guy got
yes.
here.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's amazing. That is one of the things that I think, you know, in the 2025 shows that I've done that are stand-up that is so interesting to me is pace is such a fascinating beast, like, and how... You know, I did this tour where I did half stand-up. The night was 45 minutes music, 15-minute intermission, 45 minutes of stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And the rooms were so interesting because I was playing everything from like a 300-person room, and then I finished at the Ryman. And boy, yeah. you talk about a different... And it's all, and I mean, it's all real-time experience for me. I have no clue what I'm doing. So, you know, like I've been on stage talking, obviously, my
sure,
whole life,
yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
but not like that where the guitar was just sitting on the side. Like I was really doing stand-up. And the you know, the 300-person room in Portland, Oregon was so fast because people laugh and it's, and then you're like on to the next joke.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
yeah.
you're, it's all real-time processing. But boy, the Ryman.
Yeah, which is the most perfect venue in the world.
But it's, it, which is amazing. One of the best nights of my life. But it's a 7-second delay. I mean, it's like applause went and you're, and then I realized, I don't, what do I do right now?
Yeah, yeah. There's a very famous conversation between Louis and Seinfeld and Chris Rock and Ricky Gervais. It's I don't remember what. Yeah, Gervais produced it. It was on HBO. I forget what it was called. If you just type in their names, you'll find it. But Louis talks about that when he first started doing theaters with Seinfeld. He goes like, people would clap and it would go long, like these long applauses, and he goes like, I didn't know what to do, like, am I supposed to bow, am I supposed to, and Seinfeld said stay in the bit, so whatever, if you're angry stay angry, if you're smiling stay smiling, you
That's
just have
amazing.
To yeah you have to emote at that point, like what was I feeling at the end of this bit,
and then
it stretches it out even longer, you know.
There is
a delay, you know.
It's great. That stuff, that's just all the things that I think nobody ever knows unless you do it once or twice and you're like, oh, that's a real thing. So tell me this. So where'd you, let's rewind, where'd you grow up, where are you from?
I grew up in Seattle, Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was the, I mean, this is always one of, is your family funny? Is that like a thing?
Yeah. My humor is a very, my wife and I were talking about this the other day. My stand-up is actually a pretty even breakdown of my parents.
In what way?
Well, and even though it's just
such
funny because I,
statement.
Yeah, it is. You know, my parents split when I was 5, but it's still kind of like, my dad is silly. Very silly, and they're silly in my act, and then my mom is very sarcastic and, and can be kind of like biting funny, and that's in there too. Actually a pretty nice little I came up with this phrase to describe my stand-up, which is family friendly nihilism is what I do.
it's so true.
It's clean, there's no swear words. You know, every once in a while, there'll be like some Pixar like type jokes where you're like, oh, only the adult got that.
Yeah.
And those are fun little nods, you know.
Right.
But it's very mean and critical and like in dark at times.
Yeah.
Not like Jeselnik dark, but, you know.
Yeah.
But you would still let your kids watch it. And by like I had I was in Seattle doing shows. This was like a month ago, and I had someone walk during one of my shows because she was upset over the one of the vaccine jokes that I made, and she left, and the owner, as she was like, she said something to me on stage and then she left. It was fine. It was, as far as heckles go, it was a pretty boring story, and she left, and then as she was like complaining to the owner, and the owner goes like, hey, I just want to let you know, like, if you're offended by him, he's the cleanest comic I book, so never come back here.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So to answer your question, yes, that my parents were funny.
And you have siblings?
I have one older sister, and she's funny too. Yeah,
she's funny too. Okay.
Yeah.
So would you say that growing up, I mean, that like you had a there was humor in the home? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, because it was my dad. You know, my house was me, my dad, my sister, and then my dad's brother, my Uncle Butch. And
Uncle Butch,
who, as I say, is exactly what you imagine him to be. 6'6".
My gosh.
Yeah. 340. Big dude. You know,
Uncle Butch.
And he was my family. My dad and my uncle loved NASCAR. And so he would his favorite driver was Terry Labonte, which this is so he would wear a Frosted Flakes jacket around all the time, just with a big rooster. You know, he's like 6'6". Just, and he drove this like and it was funny is like this is in the Seattle area, so
there's no context.
No. Everyone's like, I don't understand. They just think he's wearing a Frosted Flakes jacket. Not a NASCAR jacket.
Loves General Mills.
My dad was very silly, and there was a lot of laughter. And then Butch was pretty silly too. Butch was like this. He's like just this giant redneck Yoda. He would speak in these like proverbs all the time. I remember he said to me, I think about this once a week. He said, Dusty, he was the only one I'd ever let call me Dusty. He goes, you know, Dusty, money won't, we were watching The Price is Right, and somebody had just won like 10 grand or whatever. 'Cause he would watch us in the mornings. So we're watching The Price is Right. It's like summer break, and someone wins like 10 grand. He goes, you know, Dusty, money won't make you happy, but it won't make you sad. And I was like, that's like the wisest thing I've ever
heard. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
That's pretty great, right?
That's amazing. That's a great word.
You're like, is that in the Bible? Because it feels like it should be.
It definitely feels. It's in the message. 100%.
It's in the message. Yeah, Eugene Proverbs. coined that. Yeah.
That's amazing. So did you like? Do you remember the first time that you thought you were funny? Like, what was the moment that you were like, I think I may be funny?
You know, I remember. I always prided myself in being able to make like the teachers laugh.
Ooh.
And so there were a couple moments. I remember sophomore year. I mean, I'd gotten some laughs here and there, you know, like anybody would, and getting the feel of that. And I remember I would always crush speeches. Like, it was like an easy A. I was like, oh yes, we don't have to write it. You know, we get to say it. It's going to be a home run for me. But I remember sophomore year, honors English, our teacher, I don't even remember her last name, because I made a joke like 4 or 5 days into class where, I don't even remember how it came up, but I was like, okay, whatever you say, Shelby, like that was her name. And she laughed the context of it. And I called her Shelby the rest of the year.
No.
And none of the other kids did. So I'd be like, all right, see you tomorrow, Shelby. And I remember that getting a laugh and everybody liking it. I was like, okay, this is a different kind of laugh. Like, this is a higher level. This isn't like somebody just farted in class, or somebody said like, that's what she said, or something like that. Like, we're on a higher plane right now.
It
got me privilege that I called her Shelby all year long. You know, so that I do remember pretty vividly.
So you think you it's like your brain went, okay, this is a different currency for me. This
is getting me things. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a social advantage to be funny. I also, like a lot of kids, who end up funny, you're like, oh, this can get me out of getting bullied too. And this can get me out of situations. Yeah. Now, the flip side of that is, you know, I could just be a total arse sometimes and bully somebody else with that. Because you don't really know how to hone it quite early on.
That's great. That's so true.
There's one of my, this is one, this is, a, I'm going to tell a story. This is a comedian named Tamer Katan. He's an Egyptian comic. He's very funny. He's not an Egyptian comic. He's Egyptian and he's a comic, but he's very funny.
What are those bits?
Yeah.
All
yeah.
The pyramids and the Sphinx.
He's very funny. He told a story once of where he got bullied a ton growing up, and he would get beat up and stuff all the time by this one kid. And one day he just started making fun of him and everybody started laughing, and then the kid beat him up and everything. And then in between, the next day the kid goes, "Hey man, like if you stop making fun of me like that, I will stop beating you up." And he goes, "No, I'll take the beating. I'd rather get the laugh."
Boy, the psychosis of that is so intense.
It's like the laughs are worth it, and that's that's inside the mind of someone who has to be funny.
I was talking to a friend of mine about this the other day, John from Dadville, and telling him you were coming on, and he said, "You know," I said, "Is there anything you would ask comics?" He said, "You know, I think what I would ask him is." And I wrote these down. He said, "There's an assumption that comedians are compensating for something, especially pertaining to childhood." He's like, "That's the question I would ask all of them."
Sure.
And it kind of sounds like you're hinting around that. I mean, do you feel that way?
Oh, yeah, a million. Yeah, I just, you know, I need to be liked and affirmed.
Yeah.
I need to be loved. I need you know, not be, it's like Johnny W. is a comic there in Nashville. He says, like, it's just tiny hugs from strangers. You know,
that's good.
Just tell me I'm worth something, you know. It's not all that, but you know, again, this is my whole life, so I know lots of stories, but there's a conversation between the late Gary Shandling and Seinfeld where Seinfeld's pressing on that, and he goes, like, "Gary, you always say that there has to be damage, there has to be something wrong with you, like, can't you just be funny, can there not just be some childhood damage, can't there just not be something wrong with you?" And Shandling goes, "I hear rage." And in a moment undid Seinfeld, because Seinfeld's whole act is rage. He's angry. He's angry about big things and small things. It all comes from a place of rage. So mine comes from an incessant crippling need to be liked and affirmed.
I think it's true. It's true of all of this, just where it goes. It's like, where does that energy
go? And in stand up it's to get it into like the most, like, insert it into my veins, like and like risk, and that, like, it is in some ways a dumb way to pursue it, because I said this to my wife Melissa the other day, you know, about like particularly if you're like me and that you don't get a lot of like industry love. Like, I don't have a Netflix special. I'm not on TV very often. I get more no's. I don't have representation. I don't, you know, everything that we have, I built, my wife and I built, or I've gotten from other comics, you know? But so a lot of my stuff that has done well on the internet. And I go, you know, the problem with that, you know, the good news about the internet is you throw your stuff out there and the people that think you're funny find you. That's the goal.
The
problem is everyone who doesn't think you're funny finds you too. and usually they're more likely to tell you that they don't think you're funny. And that's why it's nice. If you can get a Netflix special, great. Because there's no comps. Remember the reviews. This has always been the rumor. The reviews were so bad on Amy Schumer's that they took away the reviews on Netflix. But that's the nature of the internet, especially towards comedy. Yeah. It's just like trash. This sucks.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do people do that in music? Do people do that like and just like get in the comments? You're like, "Oh, hack."
You know what? When I watched the Comedian movie in 2003. I had this revelation, because I realized that, you know, you watch Seinfeld go into these comedy clubs and he's starting his new night. You know, he's like building his hour again.
Yeah.
And I mean, he bombs, you know, I mean, he talks about that. He's like, "Man, that joke didn't work. And why didn't it work?" This is the biggest difference to me in comedy and music. Sting could walk in with a guitar to a, let's say, a coffee shop in New York City. Somebody just got through with a set.
Or a bass, you know, if he prefers, right?
Just, you know, just doing a bass line. Just walking the old bass down. And he could play a song, and it could be the worst song you've ever heard. Right. Like, nobody, everybody in the room is like, that's the worst song I've ever heard. But the, see, here's the trick about it. What's redeemable still is that it's his voice, and it's his guitar playing.
Yeah.
And so there's something that's always redemptive about music, no matter how bad it is, if it's a celebrity, right? Like, you know, John Mayer go in a room and play a song, and it's like, this is the worst song I've ever heard, but his voice is still pretty cool. And man, it's
right.
You know, comedy, if it's not funny, it's not just redemptive. It's the opposite.
Right.
It induces anger. And so, you know, music doesn't do that. Like, you can have a bad music night and nobody's leaving pissed. I mean, they you know, they may be like, God, that sucked, and I wish he'd played these songs. But I think there's always something you're going, it was still cool he was there, and, you know, the bass sounded cool, and, you know, there's, you, but music, comedies, if it's not good, it's just, it's anger.
Yeah. Well, and it's not as awkward because there's music happening.
Yes, that's right. There's something else. Yes.
Exactly. And there's not a built-in, you know, illicit response to music in the way that they're, I mean, there can be dancing and singing along.
Right.
Music, unlike comedy, can be consumed passively.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Comedy cannot. That's like when people talk about, like, are you still scared? I'm like, I'm not scared. Is not the right word, but I do get anxious. And when you do certain rooms, because you're just like, well, are they going to be paying attention? That's my first concern. Are you even going to be looking at me? Are you going to be eating? Or are you going to be, is it going to be, especially when you're doing like bar rooms and stuff like that? Like, we call them like bar hijack shows, where you're just like, you know, like, freaking, I'm trying to get you to even acknowledge it. Now, thankfully, there's less of those, but I have a masochist side to me. You're like, I still have to do the bad show.
So paying for something in your childhood that you're not sure what it is.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, too, you know, the other thing I think that is, we had Bargatze on Dadville, and he said something.
Oh, yeah, I'm with Nate this week. I'm doing shows Wednesday through Saturday with Nate.
What a great dude. But he said something that I thought was really true, too. He's like, you know, I hate you guys. He's like, I hate musicians. And we're all laughing. He's like, because you can get an hour down, and that's the next 50 years of your life. Congrats. It's the same hour every night of your life, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, we do, I didn't know enough about comedy to know this, but he's like, you know, you develop a tour, you develop an hour, and then usually you record the last show of the tour or the last couple, and then those jokes are dead.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, like, and then what he said, I think the funniest thing he said on the show, which killed me, he's like, that's the thing that he said, that's the thing that people don't understand is that when they're shouting a bit they want you to do, they're shouting the punchline.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's so true. Like, you know, they want you to do the, you know, whatever bit. And you're like dad bod bit. And you're like, well, you just, I mean, now you kind of know where this is going.
Exactly. You think you want me to do that, but you actually don't.
Well, you know what you just said a minute ago that spoke to that too? And I just had Angela Johnson on yesterday.
Oh, I love Angela. Yeah.
And she was saying, she's like, you know, the thing that gets tricky with the internet too, in putting out specials is, and you just said that about your bits, like that with the seatbelt bit, is like, you'll forget a line that's really inconsequential maybe to the bit.
Yeah.
But people have memorized the bit.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, breath for breath.
Yeah.
And when you don't do, they're like, no, that's not the bit. And you're like, well, it's not the bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
I'm
still telling the funny part. It's just, I'm not doing the.
Right.
And she was like, you know, she said she was speaking specifically about the nail salon bit. She's like, I mean, she's like, there were years where I forgot two or three parts of that bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I just, you know, same as you, somebody would be like, hey, you realize? And she's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. They're yelling out, crypto gel. You forgot the gel part. You forgot.
Yes, exactly. And I was like, isn't that so funny? And she's, and then, you know, to your point about music, she's like, you know, those have become. Now they're like the encore, you know, because it's what people want. And she's like, for a season I didn't do them, and now I'm doing them again because that's what the people are paying for. But, you know, to your point, you're going to forget those things. It's, you know, where music is so different that way. You know, like, obviously you don't want to change it too much, but you change a melody here and there. Nobody's like throwing, you know, like their salt and pepper shakers at you in the show, you know.
It's no, like, and, oh, and maybe they exactly, want you, you know. To, you know, maybe they want you to an extent because you have a way that you can really enhance the bit or the song, you know, and they're like, oh my gosh, this was great. He did all the things I want from this, but he also added to
brought
it,
something
you know,
else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you combine it with another song or right. something like that. Right. You know, that's right.
How much grace do you give yourself for that in a bit? Like how much, like if you're, you know, the night's killing and then you're in the middle of a bit and all of a sudden your brain goes, ooh, this is funny. Say that. Like, do you give yourself space for that? Are you kind of like, nah, I'm trying to kind of stick to the material or.
Yeah, I do. I try and, again, the ADD thing, I just kind of try and ride the dopamine. Like if I go, like if
can
this
you name
is
your next comedy.
Yeah.
Special
ride the dopamine. Yeah. But then you also like, you know, usually if I do that, I have a built-in grace with the audience and that I've been funny enough for a while.
That's
and then you
well
have
said.
What we call like save lines that you go like, all right, that's a new bit. It'll be come see me in a year. That's going to be better. You know, stuff
yeah,
like
yeah,
that. Like,
yeah.
Or you've just, it's, you're very comfortable messing up. You're very comfortable with the joke missing at a certain
yeah.
point, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to, but you know, I'm in kind of a rebuilding stage too, where you just go like, but I have to get this down. I have
yeah.
to, you know, I have to be productive up here.
Yeah.
But then you're also thinking like, also the camera's rolling. And if I can get a clip here, I have to be productive here and to build my career. You know, Angela and Nate are in very different career spaces than
yeah.
me. And they,
yeah,
they
yeah.
have, you know, built in fan bases at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
And I've got fans. I'm aware of where I'm at, but you know, the whole name of my tour right now is School Night Headliner. Like, come see me, because if you're going to see me, it's going to be on a Wednesday or a Sunday or a Thursday, because that's when the punchline's going to have me. It's
yeah,
on these
yeah,
nights,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I'm not
yeah.
getting the full weekend very often.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
But you're when you're at this stage, like you really are in the. And Nate said this to me the first weekend I opened with him. Like he goes, like if you get fans, you win. That's the goal. And you know
wow.
that because you're in the same, like, you know what we have in common? We're in the ticket selling business.
That's right.
And so you go like, that's why I put out so much content. It really happened over COVID. I was like, I learned how to edit videos. I got to buckle this down. I got to figure out what I'm going to do. Like, so it's a weekly podcast and a video on Sunday
yeah.
and
yeah.
2 to 3 TikToks a week and 2 to 3 reels and tweets and da 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 da. Like, this is
yeah,
the engine
the
that exactly. And, you know, Angela was the first that I know of viral comedian.
Well, she's kind of mentioned that. Yeah. She
yeah.
said that was like one of the first things on YouTube that went viral.
And isn't that crazy to think about, you know? And Nate never had that. Nate got big on Netflix. But
yeah.
Nate's also 10 years ahead of me. And the last time I was with him, I was doing a corporate in Toledo and he was at the Funny Bone there. So I just talked to him and I go like, how many years did you do these at Half Full? And he was like, my whole career. My
yeah.
whole career was doing Half Full Funny Bones, which is a
yeah.
very sad sentence. That's a memoir right there. In Toledo.
Somebody
in
listening
Dayton.
To this just started crying and they
yeah.
don't know why. They're
yeah,
just like
exactly.
pulled over the car and just
yeah.
immediately.
And that's before they even saw the comedy condo.
That's right.
So, you know, it really, but he, the nice thing about Nate is he was so ready for the moment because
yeah.
he had been grinding for
yeah.
for so long, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. You probably feel the same way of you're like, I have like this new thing that I want to share with you, but I want to have some stuff that you'll only get to see live. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I want to, like, yeah. I'll do that sometimes with bits where like I'll post a 20 seconds of a 45 second bit where, so they'll feel like they'll
yes.
hear it, but then, you
no
know,
more.
When they come live, they're like, okay, he had some
there
extra there that he,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's funny. That's a very interesting thing about the fans. That's why I've always felt like I'm cheating when I do these stand-up shows, because my fans come. I mean, I'm not having to deal with anybody that's like mad they're there or is like, there's no heckle. I mean, you know, my stand-up career, with a little C career, has been hysterical because of the, you know, 25, 30 shows I've done. It's my fans. So it's a complete
right.
cheat because they're gracious. They're ready to laugh. They know what they've gotten themselves into.
It's like it feels like an evening with.
That's exactly what it's like. And so
you know,
when I've done those shows, although I'll tell you, man, the only time I ever had to deal with with that was, you know, when I did my first like legit, I'm not bringing a guitar I'm just doing stand up for the night, right? I did like mm-hmm. probably 12 of these like 3 or 4 years ago. And it's been longer than that. And so I showed up and I was like, all right, like, you know, and we promoted them like that. And I let my fans like, hey, this is, I will not have a guitar. Like I'm telling jokes. And so they all were amazing and so fun. And I learned a million things about doing it.
Sure.
And then I did this night in Denver and I walked out and I immediately knew, they don't know. Like I just knew it. I knew 10 feet into walking on the stage. I was like, they don't know this is a stand-up night. So I kind of made that joke at the front and I was like, hey, you know, maybe they don't, maybe they do. So I was like, I'm going to give them grace. And so I did the night. It was great. Thankfully they get done and I walk backstage and they start yelling song titles. Like I'm done with it. I don't have a guitar. I don't even have an app that I could strum on my phone. And I just had to sit there and I told my roadmate, I was like, you got to go turn the music on. They think I'm still doing music. And so he went out and I sort of heard like some, you know, that kind of thing. Well, yeah. I get back to the hotel room and man, my Twitter's just like lit up. People are like, dude, not cool. We drove from Boulder, you know, whatever. Like, and I just spent like the next hour. I've never had that. I'm so thankful for this in my life, but that's not my people. My people are wonderful, kind, sweet people.
Right.
And so I'm like an hour. I'm just putting out fires. And thankfully, to all of their credit, except for one guy who was a youth minister who demanded his money back, but I'm not bitter about that. But God will judge him. Oh, dude, I was like, are you kidding? Are you really the one guy? So, I was so kind to him. But anyway, I reached out to these people and I was like, hey, this is what we found out. The club, and they admitted it. They said, we just miffed it. We put up a picture of you and guitar. And that's our bad.
Yeah.
And so once everybody was great. In fact, all of them said, hey, I'm not saying it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's totally good. We get your side. And they were great. They were so gracious.
Yeah, it's not what they expected. Yeah.
Yeah, but I've only had to deal with that one. It wasn't even, and I was like, oh God, this would ruin me if I had to deal with like people who didn't like me on a nightly
Well, that
basis.
Is a different thing. Like I've never had to deal with that where people, because you know, that's the good and the bad of stand-up is the only thing they want you to do is be funny. That's yeah, that's the expectation is you walk out there and they go, dance, joke monkey, dance, yeah. You know? Yeah. And that's the thrill of it is you can, you know, I meandered in a lot of different careers and I was a youth pastor for a while. I was in journalism for a while. I was, you know, trying to be like a writer for a while. And, wow. And what I liked about stand up and why I was drawn to it is we get to talk about anything we want. You get to talk about anything you want,
but
it has to be funny. Yeah. And if it's not funny, then you didn't do your job. But if you can talk about anything you want as long as it is funny. Yeah. And you might make people mad, but that's just part of the job, you know.
So you guys, listen, earlier in the episode, I talked to you about Grip 6, but wanted the chance to give you guys more info on their wallets as well. And not just their belts. They got dope belts and they got dope socks. I'm sure all of you guys out there can relate to the hassle of shoving a hefty billfold or trifold wallet into the back pocket of your pants. We know what happened to George Costanza. I mean, his back got jacked up, guys. We only got one life to live. What are we doing? Not only does it hardly fit, but it leaves a huge, unsightly lump right there on your rear. Also, if you're not careful, you just start walking in circles from the weight of it all. We've all been there. Okay, we've all been there. Well, the good people at Grip 6, because they love you, have created a wonderfully slim, low-profile wallet. We call that a low-pro wallet that is less than half an inch thick. Okay, that's about as thin as a common smartphone, guys. Those groundbreaking Grip 6 wallets are now built with space-grade aluminum. I mean, that's even cool to say. My Grip 6 wallet has a sleek and handsome leather jacket that adds even more space for cards and cash. Sadly, there's not a lot of cash these days. I digress. While not in use, all your cards are locked in place and safely secured with RFID blocking, so you ain't got to worry about that in your life. That's one less thing to check off. The Grip 6 wallets make wonderful gifts for your husbands, brothers, or anyone special in your life. Don't forget that Grip 6 wallets are all made right here in the U.S. of A. and come with a lifetime guarantee, just like all of their products, okay? That's because they love us. They don't have to, but they do, guys. That's why it means so much. So visit Grip 6, that's GRIP6.com today to shop these awesome wallets, belts, socks, and more. What got you, when was the moment that you were like, I'm going to do stand-up? Like, was that a gradual thing or did you have sort of like a, you know,
it was
Paul
my first
Damascus
open mic.
Road?
Yeah. It was it's like Constantine, the clouds opened up. And you know, instead of a cross, it was a microphone. It said, "In this sign, conquer."
Or it was a cross of mic. It was a cross of microphones.
Yes, exactly. Oh, God. No, no. I grew up in love with stand up, and
So you had always listened. So that was something.
Oh,
that was...
yeah.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Well, and I grew up, you know, I'm 36, and, you know, I was like the Comedy Central generation where in the 90s, that's what Comedy Central played was stand-up. It was a stand-up TV or stand-up network. It was stand-up all the time. So all the Comedy Central presents I had memorized
and I
would watch all the time.
Small aside, listen, I'm coming in hot here, Dustin, forgive me, but I think maybe the tightest, funniest 30 minutes of stand-up I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Is the Kevin James Sweat the Small Stuff.
It's fantastic.
That
so good.
30 minutes about ruined me.
Yeah. With the door
it was a Comedy Central thing. I remember I liked it so much that when I was in college, I ordered the video because after it got done, it was like, if you want this video, call this number. And you know, and I literally got on my landline and was
video,
like, I need this video. And they sent it to me. Like, that's how much I loved it.
What a very dated sentence.
Oh my gosh. Everybody, anybody under 20 listening to this is like, that might as well be like hieroglyphics.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you churned butter and awaited its arrival via horse carriage, you know?
And I had a disease and we did a good bloodletting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
my mother retrieved it because I was bedridden with gout.
That's right. The Oregon Trail was hard on us.
Exactly.
So you grew up in that. So you were listening to
constantly.
Like, you liked it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's one of those things that you're like, you think about it like, oh man, what if I was that person? But you don't know how to do it. There's no career path.
Yeah.
And so when we moved to San Diego, which is where I live now, 10 years ago, and that was like, you know, I grew up in Seattle. I'm from there. I went to college there. Like and everybody knew you there. So to just start stand up felt like, what are you doing? I was married. I had kids, but I was a little more anonymous down here. And so it was like, hey, I've always wanted to do this. And I think I just need to figure out how to do an open mic. And so, you know, I just, you know, Googled it and figured out and called the number and called in and put your name in and went and did an open mic at Madhouse Comedy Club in downtown San Diego. And it was a 3-minute set. There was maybe 6 people there, which actually for an open mic isn't terrible. And I told a 3-minute story about how in middle school I had to wrestle a girl. You know, I was in wrestling, I had to wrestle a girl. And it got a laugh at the middle part and I got a laugh at the end. And I was like, okay, I'm hooked.
Okay,
you know, but
really?
it wasn't like I'm going to do this professionally. It was like, I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep doing open mics. But I was 27 and had 2 kids at the time. So
Jeez,
like I was a late starter. You know, that's like I was the oldest by far, you know, going to the mics and not only even just the oldest, like I had a whole life, you know. So
Yeah.
So that was, I did that and I was working at a rec center at the time for 5-6 years doing both. And there was a lot of, you know, as it started to pick up, the start of the road stuff started to pick up. There was a lot of, you know, work the early shift on Thursday, drive or get on a plane, go be at a club all weekend, fly home Monday morning after sleeping in the airport Sunday night and take a shower and go to work. There was a lot of that for a while, you know.
Jeez Louise.
But you know how it was when people are like, oh, I can't believe they did that. And then, but in the moment, like any entertainer, artist, you're like, what do you mean? Why would you not do that?
That's right.
That's an obvious. That would say, you know, like comics aren't wowed by that story.
Yeah,
but
right.
The people that are wowed by that story have never kind of gotten caught up in oh, I might be able to get to do, I don't like using the word dream because I wasn't dreaming of it. I wasn't even fantasizing about it, but you got caught up in like, what if this was my job? You know, like this would be the most incredible thing in the world. I don't have to have a boss. I get to, you know, I mean, that was the main thing, you know, I get to do the thing that I love.
Yeah.
You know, so
also I don't have a boss. That's
a big one. That is, I mean, I mean, you do have a million different bosses, but
Yeah. The bosses change every night. You know, that is one of the things that's so funny to me about music and comedy. And I mean, this could be a whole other podcast because I'm sure you have a million thoughts about this. But, you know, my story is the same with music. I mean, like, you know, just on the road and in rental cars in my station wagon for 3 years that me and my bass player toured the country. And, you know, in this, like, Buick Roadmaster, you know, General Woodensides. And so, but I was like, well, what else are you going to do? Of course you're
right.
And so there is a part of me, like, the 43-year-old kind of mean old man in me. Like, and I'm sure this has got to be the same in your world with TikTok and you know, Reels and all, you know, internet, the with Instagram. Listen how old I am. I'm getting older as I talk.
Yeah.
But, there is a part of me that sort of gets mad and grieves that people just jump that now. You know, they sort of stuff can catch and then, you know, they're like, dude, it's just, I went from, you know, doing reels in my garage to, man, I'm selling out comedy club, whatever. And it's like, God, man, that can be a tough pill for me sometimes because I'm like, not only am I like, man, there's wonderful things to learn from doing that, but there's also like, oh, it's good you got to do that. I'm glad you didn't wake up with like the airport carpet pressed into your face and you drooled and you're having to like run to your gate to make.
Right. You know? I do have 1,000 thoughts on that. One, what's nice is that those same opportunities are there for us now and that they can help us.
Yep.
And
well
that, you know, we have now we're not as good at it usually. You know, as far as like these creators go and, you know, there's some people who are just moguls that are just excellent at it. But I will say that the live show is not as good and there's no way it can be.
It's the great equalizer.
Exactly. And their fans know it and they know it. They know it as, and I will tell you, cause I have been in those green rooms and I have been with big acts who have been made it solely on the internet and didn't have a basis on these other things. They know it. And there's an insecurity there. And I'm glad there's an insecurity there because there should be an insecurity
there. That's right. That's
the second you love them. You're kind to them.
Yeah.
You're happy to about them, but they know, you know, we have, I'm sure that, this exists in every realm. You know, we have what we call a comic that you go, they have all the respect, you know, they're as funny as it gets. They crush their live show. Nobody wants to follow them.
Yeah.
And they did it quote unquote, like the right way.
Right,
now,
right.
Like there's a trap in that you don't want to just be a comic, or an artist, or musician.
Yeah.
And you do. I mean, truly I'm truly on the fence of what would you prefer to have, like a big fan base of the respect of your peers. And I think I would take the respect of my peers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, it's not even a thing. I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it really carries a lot more weight and you know, it doesn't pay your bills.
right.
It's hard to monetize the respect of your peers, but you know, you have those moments where you go like, yeah, selling out a show is really cool.
Yeah.
Having one of your heroes tell you that you're great and they're funny and they respect you, that's the stuff that as an entertainer, you know, and I use entertainer, not artist, intentionally there.
Yeah,
that's really
yeah.
what you want, you know?
Yeah. Well, tell me, I mean, that's with Kevin Hart, you've had that. I mean, what is that about? That's so
I mean, that's
cool.
what I'm saying. Like the, you know, the... I've had like a couple smaller TV appearances, but the biggest one I did was on Comedy Central, and that was selected by comedians.
That's comedians
going, this is funny. That's really what you want there. And they're, you know, you do the interview and for, you know, there's a bunch of comics in the room and for Kev to pull me aside and be like, dude, that was so funny. You're absolutely hysterical. You're like, that's it. I'm good.
That's
here.
That's it. Yeah, man.
I'm good here.
That's it. That's
now
it.
The next time I see him, I saw him last month at a club in LA. Doesn't remember me, but it doesn't mean it didn't mean it. It doesn't mean it didn't mean it in that moment.
Oh man,
I have video proof of me making him laugh.
Yeah, that's so life to me. So okay, I want to kind of go through. These aren't rapid fire, but I just want to get your opinion on these questions. These are things I'm asking each comic. Is there a bit you have that you think is funny that just people don't laugh at, but you're just absolutely sold on trying to make it work? I love this dynamic.
Yeah. Oh gosh. So
you know where
many.
You're like, okay, tonight is gonna kill, and then okay, yeah, no, but tonight it's gonna kill.
There's so many. Gosh, I mean, when I'm trying to think about bits that I thought was funny, that nobody else thought was funny. I mean, where to even begin?
That feels the same.
It's gosh, let me, I want to, like, all I have to do is dig through notes of like what my maybe I can come up with a, oh, is this that what, like, you, what's that,
do you keep notes? Is that kind of where you keep your ideas?
Yeah,
and stuff,
well, and yeah, my writing process is I have a little folder right here. It's called Next Bits to Try. These are like new ideas. You know, it'll just be like a very short idea, yeah, that then, yeah, I'll, yeah, break. So like, yeah, this one is this isn't a bit I've tried. The name of this bit is Everyone is Full of Crap. But that came from, if it comes to anything political, I try and make fun of both sides pretty equally, because truest. Yeah, anytime someone brings up politics and they like badmouth the president or the last president, I always say the same thing. I go, oh, I hate all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like that guy, but I don't like your guy either.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
don't.
Yeah. Equal
so this
distaste.
One, right. So this is one I wrote. This is the bit is that I've been writing, is that I think it's very like every side is full of crap, because there's a lot of people right now complaining that you have to show a vax card or get a negative test because that, you know, that's required to get in there. Right. And they're all mad, even though that's that business's ego. That's that business can't make that choice. They can't select who they serve and they don't hurt serve. And these were the same people who were totally okay with that bakery not making a wedding cake for a gay couple. Right. So that's once. But then the second one is that the CDC and everybody has said the best thing that you could do to fight COVID is to boost your immune system and be as healthy as you can. Also, if you get the vaccine, you can get free Krispy Kreme. So that's what, so that's the idea.
Yeah. That's great.
So
that's
anyways, great. That,
so do you, like, how do you, this is so weird. Maybe this is normal. Maybe it's not. But when I was working on these bits for that tour, I would literally stand in this room and talk out loud.
Yeah.
I would just pace the room.
Yeah.
And I would have the same thing. I'd have like kind of a subject heading. And I'd be, okay, I don't know what I think about that. And I would literally start talking. I'd be like, hey, but, and I'd be like, oh, that's pretty funny. And then, oh, God, I can't get anywhere with that. Is that, or are you doing that on stage?
No, well, sometimes, but usually I have an idea and then I just talk to myself like that all day.
Okay, okay.
I do it. That's what you're doing is you're trying to find the joke of it, but you're also trying to find the, comedy has like a rhythm to it.
That, yes.
You're trying to find kind of the music to it of just like,
right,
da 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 da, you know, how am I going to set this up? How am I going to get into it?
Yeah.
And a bit like that, which is kind of delicate. Yeah. I've just like I would say, like I, you know, little lines and stuff along the way. So yeah, the, that I do the exact same thing, which is I just talk to myself.
Yeah,
I don't reserve it to one room though. I just, it's my whole life.
Oh yeah.
Like the kids or Melissa will be like, oh, you're writing. And I was like, I mean, yeah, let's be honest. Like that sounds so pretentious, but yes, I am doing the thing that I do for a living.
Yeah. That's it. I'm the same with songs. Like I'll come in and Andy's like looking at me and she, I mean, she's just the Peanuts librarian. And I'm like, cause I'm like, oh, that chorus could be better. And she sees it, Maya. She's like, are you still writing? I'm like, yeah, sorry. Look at me. Do you think it's hard being funny without being dirty? I mean, you're really good at it, but do you find
oh,
that
thank
to be
you.
A struggle?
No, I think it's a funny's funny. I think that it's, I don't think it's easy to be funny being dirty. I don't, I think that being funny on stage is exceedingly hard.
Yeah,
and
no matter what.
Whether you're swearing or you're being dirty or, you know, in certain crowds, it's a disadvantage to be dirty, you know, like that. They're,
you lose them.
That Saturday early show that might have a lot of white hair out there, they might not want to hear about that. So, you know, I just think that you pick your lane and what the good thing about working clean. Well, there's a lot of good things about working clean, but what is beneficial to me is anything that makes you edit is good. Right. I mean, that's like anything that makes you refine.
Wow, that's a
your
great
ideas
thought.
is it's just going to make you, you know, make better art, make better content.
Yes, yeah. death and in just in life, right?
Totally. I mean, just, 100%. Sort of just, yeah. Don't say the first thing on your mind. Just give it a second. give it a minute. And yeah. Even better, maybe yeah. Consider don't say
yeah. it. Yeah. You know, it was funny. Speaking of that, I told Angela this too, but that was one of the things my manager at the time, a guy named Chris, came out. And I was probably 5 or 6 shows into the tour when I was doing the stand-up thing. And I remember after the show, he was like, look, man, trust the bits. Because he had seen the show a bunch. And he was, and I just added so much stuff because I was bored. And yeah. I was just going, hey, that's the first thing I'm thinking of. I'm going to say it. And he was like, it's a great 45 minutes. Just trust it. And I needed to hear that because, to your point, I was like, one, I'm bored. And two, I'm like, I've got a million other things I could say about that. So I'm just going to say them. And I would feel the night like, oh, this is turning into something. I'm trying to corral too many Mustangs.
Right.
Ripping and running. So yes, that's sort of a general great thought.
Well, a lot of time it happens on a bit where you just start off, you're like, man, I got like a hop. 3-4 minutes here, and then once you refine it, you're like, oh, that's a new 30-second joke. Yeah, I got a new tweet out of this, you know, because
they just expand.
They start big, funny. And then you just chop them down. You're like, now I'm Hedberg. Now I'm Emo Phillips.
that was probably the first thing I learned in my first night of stand up, which was I've never been more scared. In my life, I did a show at the Belcourt Theater here, which is, I don't know, maybe 400 people. It was sold out. My first night of ever really doing this.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. But I learned that night in real time, there is nothing more terrifying than when they laugh in the middle of the joke and you still got to end the joke. Oh, my gosh. Still to this day, that's the hardest thing I think about it to me is going, the middle of that is the funniest part.
Yeah.
And then they're going like, oh, well, what happened? And you're like, well, no, the rest is sort of consequential to the rest, you know.
I did a show a while back where like I was like, I started kind of exploring on an idea. And I don't remember what the joke was. And I kind of like told what I thought the joke was. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to do that joke anymore. And someone goes like, no, keep going. I go, no, that was it. I told the joke. And I was like, that's what I'm saying. I said, they didn't even realize a joke had happened. They thought I was just meandering on the topic.
It's comedy to me. Stand-up comedy is just so vulnerable. Like it's such a vulnerable, that's the thing that fascinates me the most about it, is you are just so naked to everything up there.
Yeah. Well,
at any moment.
In music, like if it sounds good, everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Like, and then if you can have, probably who I've listened to more than anywhere else in my life is Damien Rice. If you can have something that sounds great and you resonate with the words and you feel something and they encapsulate, they're all great. You're like, great, fantastic. I'll love you forever. But the music has to sound good first.
Yep.
If it sounds like crap, then you can. Yeah. You're never. With stand up, it's very different. And that you're you're like letting them into your brain in a weird way. So like, it's the lyrics. It's as if you would just go up and say the lyrics, and they're like, oh, I don't resonate with that idea. I think what you're saying is stupid. So like, you can let them into it. Like I had this thought. I was just looking at my notes right here. Is that this is what I'm saying. It puts you into a weird spot of somebody's brain. If that, you know, when white people are serial killers, they always have to have a gimmick. Like, you know, and it was like it was based off the Zodiac killer. And I was like,
they gotta have a hook.
They gotta have a hook. Like it's an arts and crafts thing. Like it's like, ah, no, man. Like they treat it like we're like professional wrestlers or something. Like, oh yeah, no, that's the, that's the Unabomber, you know, he's got his look. He's got his look, you know, and I just, that's why it is very vulnerable because they're going, what the heck is wrong with you? Why is your brain like that? Yeah. But then when you do get it out there and they resonate with the idea or they see the silliness of it, it's so wildly sad. Yeah,
but you know, to your point about, that's what I mean that I'm learning about this is like that bit, the thought of it is hysterical, but the work you got to do is it's got to land. You got to take it somewhere. You can't just go like, hey, he's got a hood. Now you're like, well, where else does that go?
Yeah. Why do they have a gimmick? Why is it, you know?
Yeah. Does it go into another bit? Yeah, that's what Angela talked
I have
about.
To research all different. I have to type in white serial killers and be like, oh, yeah, the Green River guy. That's right. He had a thing. He was like,
the cop show up at your door and like, listen, we've seen your search history here.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Dustin in there? Would you send him out?
You already kind of look like Gary Ridgway. So let's
just deal with that right now.
Yeah.
Okay, what is the difference between being funny and being a stand-up comedian?
Oh, yeah, being funny on stage is a totally different thing. It's like, one's not easier than the other, but...
Oh, I disagree. I mean, I think what y'all do is wildly harder than me.
Well, I guess by numbers, yeah, there are more funny people than there are stand-up comedians. But what I mean by that is just because you're a good stand-up comedian doesn't mean you can be funny in a group. A lot of times you just don't want to be. You're like, this isn't for me. I don't particularly enjoy... all of these dynamics, you know.
Yeah, the repartee.
But Melissa does say every once in a while, my wife Melissa, like, every once in a while we'll be in a group and I'll just, like, turn it on.
Oh.
And she's like, well, that was fun. You see how you just put on this show at dinner and everybody was like, you really turned it on there. And I was like, well, you know, every once in a while.
It's what
you
I
know,
do,
babe. I'll bring
it's
out my party trick. Yeah, it's what I do. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's the writing, it's the premeditation of it all. It's you're not just being silly in a moment. You're creating a thought and a point and an idea. It's much more beginning, middle, end. Again, it's writing. Writing is the difference.
Yeah, that's really good. Just to your point, this is a true story. So the opposite is true for me. So literally, like with my wife, it's the exact opposite. Like
she needs you to turn it off sometimes.
Oh my gosh, dude. It was so embarrassing how much we early in our marriage, especially, it was a thing where I would get home and there'd be sort of like we'd get home and walk in the door and it'd be quiet and I'd be like from a dinner party or something, and I'd be like, so yeah. And I would know because my wife is a truth teller and she'd be like, that was too much. It was way
you
too
went
much.
Way too hard.
Way. And the thing is, I'm sure like you, she'd be like, no, you were really fun. I mean, it's not that if you were funny, but like, I remember one time, one of the moments I fell in love with her. We had been hanging out with some friends at lunch after church. And dude, I could have sold merch after this lunch. That's how well it went. Like it was literally,
funny.
I was killing it. Everybody at the
lunch.
Table. Oh, crushing lunch. We get in the car and we were dating at the time. And I mean, I am cloud 100. I mean, we could have floated home. I was just so happy. And I'm looking at her kind of like, that's what you signed up for, babe. Like, lucky you. And I'll never forget. She goes, what was that? And I was like, that was humor, my lady. Yeah. You know? And she literally said like, I don't know who or what that was, but I don't like that.
Mm.
And I was kind of like, what do you mean? She goes, do you remember any of their names? And I was like, probably like Jeff or
there was Nick, probably
some white names. And that was a moment for me. Like she was like, look, I love when you're funny, but that's not about being funny. That's taking, that's not a benevolent thing. That's, you're just making it about you. And that was a huge moment for me. I think about that every time I am with people. I'm not kidding. And so it's funny.
It's really good.
Your wife is like, hey, she's like poking the dragon. And you're like, all right, listen, babe, if you want to, this thing's
going
to
fire. Well, yeah, because me not doing it is about me too. In those scenarios of just being
that's
like,
fair.
You just don't want to. But then we do, you know, we've communicated at times of just being like, yeah, but you have to understand, like, this is exhausting for me. I'm an introvert.
Yes,
I don't.
Yes.
People having people around takes life out of me.
Yes, you know?
So. But it is, that being said, when you can get a couple comics together, it's the best thing in the world.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah. We did this thing for years. I used to run this weekly show called Lestats. It was a long running show here in San Diego. It's a music venue, but they would do Tuesday night comedy. It was an independent show. It lasted for 15 years Tuesday at 9:00. And I didn't do it for all 15. I haven't been doing comedy that long, but I ran it for like 4 years. And unfortunately, COVID, you know, killed it. But the, afterwards, we would go with one of my best friends in comedy. He's a guy named Zoltan Cassis. He's a local comic here. And we would go out. We would usually have a drink or two in the green room, and then we would just go get Mexican food down, you know, down the way. Very San Diego night, you know, IPAs and tacos. And then we go to, and my wife would never talk. And she would be like, she would every once in a while, but she would say like, why would I? I'm just watching. It's like watching musicians riff together.
And we would just talk about our various hard road.
We call them Tuesdays with Zoltan. Like we would just like riff and it was so yeah. When you get a couple comics together, it can be. Nate has that old bit of his like her wife's like, yeah, oh, you know, always hanging out with your friends. She's like, my friends are professional stand-up comedians. It's a good time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the closest I ever got to that, and I'll never forget this. When I was in college, I was involved with Campus Crusade for Christ. They call it crew now, but
crew, baby.
We would do crew for life. I'm throwing the gang signs. And it was just across the microphones and callback. And so we would do conferences. They did these big regional conferences, and ours was the Southeastern one because I lived in Tennessee, and I would go, and I went to school at MTSU, and so I mean we did skits, we just basically improv to skit every week. That was kind of like what we did, because you know it was like we need to promote something. They'd be like, Dave, just make something up. And so I'd get up there and we just kind of go. And so the guy was like, hey, we're gonna do the Christmas conference thing, but we need like a skit crew. Like we need a group of like all the funniest kids from these
colleges
to go write skits for the thing. And dude, and this is like me, Rhett and Link. It was, you would know half of these people.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so we would get together and I felt like someone had injected like snake venom. And it was just like the most potent, because it was about 10 of us and it was all the funniest people at these colleges.
Wow.
And we would write skits. And I was like, this is the most fun I've ever had in my life. And I just never been around that, you know,
because right.
These are like, they weren't professional funny, but they might as well have been, because most have gone on to be funny people, you know, since then. And so I just remember like that. And it was also my favorite part of Comedian, that movie, is when he's sitting with those times where he's sitting with Chris Rock or, you know, and the part they talk about Cosby, I mean, you know, it's a whole other thing.
Right.
Where Chris Rock is just like, no, I went and saw him. And, you know, he's doing, you know, Atlantic City or whatever. So he's doing an hour. It's all new comedy. And I was like, that is just such a cool moment to see comedians getting together talking about, you know, their idols or what they're doing. I was just like so fascinated by it.
It's the best part. Well, the stage is the very best part, but the chatting, the riffing, the tables, the hanging out at the Comedy Store, all that kind of stuff is the best part. You know, it's second amazing. Best part.
Okay. Last question. You can have dinner with three other funny people that are alive. Who are they?
Oh, they have to be alive?
No, dead or alive.
Oh, dead or alive.
And Jesus could count, because obviously he's the author of humor, so I'm going to let you play that a few times.
Well, you know, I'm banking on eternity with Jesus, so I wouldn't. And Jesus is, if two or more are gathered in his name, then Jesus will be there anyways. So.
Oh my! I'm imagining three of y'all.
Jesus. But he's in his. He's in the Force Ghost mode, right? Like he's like Kenobi, you know.
Force Ghost.
It would be the guys. It would be Dana Carvey, because Dana Carvey, I think.
Tell me why.
Dana Carvey is my favorite stand-up growing up, and I just think he's. He might be the funniest person alive. I don't think anybody's funnier than Dana Carvey.
Have you met?
No. I feel like I should have. I was talking to Taylor about that when we were touring this last week, and she's like, "You could meet Dana Carvey," because I was just talking about how he's like here. I go, I know theoretically I should have at this point, and I'm at a career point right now where you're like, we're not certainly not peers, but we would cross paths every once.
Yeah, so
I might do a show with
without
him,
without a doubt.
So probably Dana Carvey. You know, I grew up in love with SNL, so like SNL is kind of where my mind first goes. Yeah. Chris Rock, who I think in my, it's hard to say who's the best, you know, but I think he's my favorite stand-up comedian of all time.
Wow.
I think his like level of work and production and the way he thinks about stand-up is so interesting, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then almost just out of curiosity and fascination, like a Lenny Bruce, like a guy I love when people talk about like, oh, it's comedy these days, everyone's getting canceled and cancel culture is like, do you realize people used to go to jail for this? Like, you're not, just because some people got mad at you on Twitter, yeah, it just doesn't really negatively affect you. Relax. Yeah. Lenny Bruce went to jail multiple times for this. Yes. Freaking relax. So I would be curious as like a real, you know, because in a lot of ways, you know, like the version of stand-up that we have now was kind of pioneered by Lenny Bruce. Mm-hmm. You know, just that nightclub thing, just me and a mic. Now, like Mark Twain did versions of it where he would just kind of tour his humorous things. But yeah, it would probably be, my guess is that Lenny wouldn't be very fun at dinner. He seemed a little on the intense side.
Quote unquote.
But I would just say, be so curious, you know.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
but I would want him to watch TikTok for a while first.
And, and then get him really revved up.
Get him really revved up, yeah.
Dude, thank you so much. So anything you want to plug? I know you got the podcast. Don't make me come back there.
Yeah, I've got a podcast called, yeah. And then, you know, I had a special come out last year, but we put it on YouTube just a month or two ago on YouTube called Overwhelmed that you guys can go check out on my room. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate that.
Are you in Nashville anytime soon?
Spring. I'll be there in the spring for the Nashville Comedy Festival. So.
Oh, nice. Great.
Yeah.
Which is great. Everybody see that. Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. Thanks again for your time. You're a legend.
Yeah. Take care, man. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening to It's Hard Being an Idiot podcast. And make sure to check out my stand-up comedy album called It's Hard Being an Idiot everywhere you listen to music and comedy.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.